You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedians Comedian Podcast. Hello there, I'm Stuart Goldsmith. Welcome to the show, listeners old and new. This is another live episode recorded in front of an audience at the Gilded Balloon at this year's Edinburgh Fringe Festival. This is the fabulously funny Mr. Hannibal Burris.
Hey, what's up?
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us, Hannibal.
Thanks for having me.
I've got to start. I should start with a little explanation. Normally, most of my guests on the show, I've been a comedian in the UK for about 7 years, and most of the guests that I have on the show are known to me from the circuit, or I've known them for a long time.
Yeah.
And you, I have to admit, I'm totally in awe that you got back to my email and agreed to come and do the show for me.
Oh, cool.
So I'm a little bit giddy like a schoolgirl, because I saw your show in Edinburgh last year, and it blew me away.
Thanks, man.
Kind of got your CD. I saw you this year. I've got the new album that you've released, Animal Furnace, and I just think you're fantastic. How are you enjoying the festival?
It's going well, man. The weather has been nice. It's almost been too nice, where I feel like we owe the city something. But it's been good, and the shows have been going well, and doing a bunch of extra shows. It's been a fun festival this
year. Sure. It's your second year now. It's my second year. And you were nominated.
And my last.
Is it really?
But I won't be back next year, I don't think.
Okay.
I could take a couple years and I'll take a couple year break and come back.
Maybe. Sure. Yeah. Sure. So last year you were nominated for the Newcomer Award.
Yeah.
Foster's Comedy Award. How was that?
That was cool.
That is an interview, ladies and gentlemen. How was that? It was cool.
It was cool. Yeah, I mean, it was nice, and it helped sell my later shows.
Sure, sure.
It was a cool thing to be nominated. So
what motivated you to come to Edinburgh? I mean, let's try and put you in context for those people here who maybe don't know you, haven't seen you, and those people listening on the podcast at home. How long have you been doing comedy, and why did you decide to come to Edinburgh?
I've been doing comedy 10 years. And last year I came to Edinburgh because I heard a lot about the festival, and it's, you know, a long festival. You get to just do an hour every night and just really work it out. So yeah, I thought it would be a cool, different thing to do. And this year I did it for those reasons, and because my agent said that I'd be able to make a lot of money.
Actually, it's perfectly reasonable. Is that going to happen? I mean, normally it's a tale of woe from all the comedians here. You feel
it's
like you've
all right.
got the financial
We'll see about future. It's more about building it for the future than it is about the right now.
Sure. So when you started in the US, you were a jobbing open spot comedian. I mean, I don't know that many American acts personally. I understand it's pretty hard out there to get spots. Where were you based?
I started in my college town, Carbondale, Illinois.
Okay.
It's Southern Illinois University, so it's about 300 miles south of Chicago. So I started doing shows there, open mics there, which is different from doing it in a big city, because in a college town, you're doing it there, it's not that many comedians. So after my second show on campus, people were coming up to me saying the stuff that I said on stage. I had specific jokes, because as when you do a comedy in college, you could do stuff about the dorms and cafeteria food. So it was just different ways to tap into it. And so I started out there, and then after I left college, I went back home to Chicago. I was doing open mics there for a few years. Yeah.
Okay. And what was your experience of the open mic circuit? Did you enjoy that work? Was it hard work? Was it a slog?
It's it can be rough sometimes. I mean, it's fun and rough. Just open micing can be tough because there'll be sometimes where there'll be 40 people on the open mic list.
40
okay. Doing 5 minutes each, and you're 37th.
Sure. So you. That's going to resonate, I think, a lot with a lot of the listenership of this show, which I know there's a lot of new comedians listen to this in the UK. And I don't know how much of this you'll have noticed, but in the UK, comedy is really exploding to the extent that a lot of people are going, you know, is the bubble going to burst?
Yeah.
Is it becoming too popular? Are too many people doing it? And at the moment, we've got, like when I was in Open Spot, you'd get 6 to 8, 9 people on a bill at most. Mm-hmm. And now it's starting to head that way. There's certain gigs where you've got to turn up to play. You've got to bring some audience members with you. Did you have to do those sort of things?
I did. And that's New York is more known for having what they call bringer shows, where you have to bring a certain amount of audience members to get stage time. And that's how clubs make money. They have shows at weird times, like 5 in the evening, which is a weird time in the States to have a show. I know it's not weird for Edinburgh.
Well, it's not weird for Edinburgh, yeah. But outside of a festival, that's
outside
pretty
of
weird.
A festival, like, 5 p.m. And so it's funny. And the way they sell these shows to newer comedians is they'll say, oh, new talent showcase, bring 10 people to come and bring 10 people and you get to perform here and we give you a tape and agents and managers and all types of industry people will be there. Like industry people are saying, hey, show me the next comedian that has 10 friends. Like nobody's saying that. Who has 10 friends? I want to see them. Line them up. Put them on a 5 o'clock show on a Saturday. I want to see them all after brunch.
That is almost, that attitude is almost, although, I mean, it's funny, but that's kind of the way things are now with, like, having to prove that you have a Facebook following and a Twitter following and a certain number of hits on YouTube. It's almost reflected that idea of a popularity contest.
Yeah, I mean, I guess after a while, every show is a bringer show in some sense where your job is to sell tickets to the venue, but when you, early on, that's just a weird thing. It's very, and in New York, it can be kind of exploitative of comedians, because I know some people that you can get kind of locked into that circuit where you just bringing people in there. And I know friends that have gotten calls like, hey, you want to come through and perform here at Broadway Comedy Club? And they're like, yeah, cool, you gonna bring your friends? Make sure you bring 10 friends.
Yeah, that's it.
Once just because they're known as a bringer, they don't care about the quality of your comedy. You could be a horrible comedian. If you could bring people, they'll still book you.
And these gigs, the bringer shows, the ones you're doing new material, you're doing brand new, this is where you're learning your craft, is it? When you're an Open Spot, when you're first starting.
Yeah, when you first start. Yeah, I did one of them in 2004. I did one where I was visiting New York, and I got my sister, her husband, and one of my friends to go. So I brought 3 people, and it was a decent show, but it didn't do anything for my career. I just was able to get on that stage, which was at one of the, not in a great comedy club. It was a dingy spot too.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the demand for stage time is the thing that's most critical to a new act.
Yeah, you have got to perform. In Chicago, it's a lot easier. They don't have those type of shows in Chicago, and there's lots of different open mics that you can go to. So I would do stand up open mics, but I would also do poetry open mics. I would just be the only comedian on a poetry open mic, and music open mics I would do, just because if you just go to an open mic, then they're gonna say, fuck that, you're not doing what we're doing. Like most of the time they let you on. And also it's a better gauge, because usually a comedy open mic is full of comedians. So I would do poetry open mics, even though it would be open mic, it would be more of a gauge of what a real audience would be like, because they're not comedians and they're not as jaded. Whereas if you're in a comedy open mic, there's just, it's other comedians. Maybe some of them might be paying attention, some of them might be in the back talking, some of them might just in their notebooks working on it. So with these other open mics, I can get a better feel for
actual audience members.
Yeah, actual audience. Yeah.
Sure. So the, working on the open mic stuff, what's the relationship in the early days between the amount of writing you were doing off stage to the amount, I mean, I don't know what your writing process at all, you brought your notebook and we'll have a look at that in a second, and I know some of my guests just go, I never write anything down, I walk on and I just sort of play with it. what was, how much writing to how many minutes of stage time? What was the kind of ratio?
I don't know. I mean, I think I was writing a lot when I first started, but it was a lot of horrible things. they weren't good at all. Like now when I'm trying to develop new material, sometimes I look back at old notebooks thinking, sure, okay, maybe I could look back at some stuff I wrote 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and look at it and see if I can have a new take on it since I've been doing it a little bit longer. And I went to look at one notebook and I said, I can't do anything with this. This is all garbage. I was like, man, what was I thinking?
That's a painful process, isn't
it? Yeah, like, God, man, I thought this was funny. I thought these thoughts needed to be preserved. Some bad stuff. But early on, I remember writing a lot of stuff. And it was a time where I think I would write a lot, because I was just always, when I was brand new, I was like, what's funny about this? Oh, I saw that. What's funny about that? And just trying to really find what's funny about lots of different things. But you only, early on, you just really only have, you know, you could probably do a good 7 minutes starting out, and then you just, sure, kind of grow from there incrementally, and you, okay, now you have a good 15, now you have a good 25, where you might write other stuff, but you have the things that kind of stick and work, and you, sure, you do those. Yeah.
So you've always been a note taking comedian. Are you still? Will you have a notebook on you at the moment? So when things occur to you, you take a note.
I take mental notes, and now I'll put it in my phone.
Yeah,
I put it in a note app in my phone.
Notebook is on the way out, isn't it? There's so many people who said, "Oh, I'll show you my app."
Well, I mean, I still sometimes if I'm just sitting down at home or something, or if I'm on a plane, I'll write in a notebook, just because even though it's easy to put something in an app or in a computer, there's something to how the mind works when you just free writing and just,
sure,
that type of process. I think you think differently than if you just like that.
Yes,
I think the brain operates differently. Yeah.
So then, how much time would you spend doing that? Would you ever say, would you ever have a kind of a disciplined schedule of, I'm going to write for X number of hours a day or a week?
It was never multiple hours. I don't think I ever got into multiples, but I didn't know. It might have been time. Early on, I might have wrote for a couple hours or something, but it was early on, I was just all about it. I got to write.
Sure. Stuff.
I would go places and write. I would make sure I would write. But now, with how fast the internet is, I just end up getting distracted,
yeah,
easily, and not doing work. The only time I could really, I'll really be able to focus and write sometimes is when on the plane, right after they tell me to turn my phone off and before they say, we can turn on devices.
Yeah, so you get
that
those.
that window on the ground.
Sure.
Before we go into the sky, that's the time where I can be like, oh, well, I guess I can't do anything electronic. I guess I gotta write now. I guess I have to do my job.
It's incredible the amount of my guests in the live show and in the previous podcasted shows who have had to come up with methods of tricking themselves,
yeah,
or isolating themselves somehow so that they can get away from all the distractions. Now,
yeah,
Adam Bloom, as you may know, is a very famous comic in the UK, and he said that his wife, when she went to work, used to unplug and take with her the wireless router.
Oh,
she'd,
wow,
like take it to work so that he'd have to do some work with no distractions, and then when he got home, you know, when she got home, he could have the internet
again. Great.
It's a good system, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't have anybody that lives in my home that loves me. I live by myself.
Yeah, with 10 people, we don't get on at all. So do you, and the environment that you're in, you don't go to an office or seek out a particular place? Do you think you have a certain coffee shop or somewhere like that you like to work?
No, I don't. I guess I should go to a coffee shop or something by my house, because then it feels like, because other people are there. I live in Brooklyn, so people are on laptops working on screenplays that'll never work out.
Yeah. It's difficult to,
yeah.
I've had that feeling myself working in a public place like that, and you're going, I have no idea what anyone else is doing here, but you always want a badge that goes, I really do this. Everything I'm writing is potentially financially viable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. But I try to just do it at home. And now I just kind of write based on stuff that happens to me, where earlier on I would try to write based on ideas, like, oh, what's funny about this? Well, now it's things that really happen to me or things that I really think. So those are easier to remember.
Sure.
If they're, because they're closer to me, and I can kind of take it to the stage and then see how it works out on stage. And,
okay.
And then I'll listen to it if I get the time. I'll listen to the recording of the set and see what I did and figure out how to fix it.
Okay. So do you record all your sets or just the
I
ones
do. I
you?
Record all of them. I don't listen to all of them. I wish I listened to more of them because when I started The Fringe this year, I said I'm going to record all of them and listen to each one and then adjust each day.
And I'm going to go to the gym every day.
Oh,
and
yes.
I'm not going to drink.
I said that exact shit. I didn't say the thing about drinking. But I did say I'm going to go to the gym. But there's no, I don't have time for the gym. I guess I could make time, but fuck it. There's all,
yeah.
Gyms always be around. They're not going anywhere.
So this is a corker. I think I really got what I was after from Hannibal. He's got lots of great stuff to say. This is a really interesting interview. We get into a lot of interesting stuff. We'll be talking about naturalness on stage, about Hannibal's persona and where it comes from. He'll also mention a catchphrase he briefly took up and quite sensibly dropped. We'll be talking a lot about process, about word economy. We'll talk about Hannibal's work on Saturday Night Live and on 30 Rock and what it's like to be in those writers' rooms. Do download his comedy album. He's got two out as far as I know. My Name is Hannibal is the first one, and the second is Hannibal Furnace. Those are both excellent, really, really funny stuff, and great to hear the progression of material from his live show to those recordings. Later, we'll be hearing about the joke he's most proud of, and we'll be doing some intriguing stuff with Hannibal's notebooks. So I'm very pleased with this one. You'll have noticed, if you're, I don't know, if you're super on it, you might have noticed, that they're now slightly out of order. I'm putting out Hannibal's now and Eddie Pepitone's show next week, so that my little trailer makes sense. I've made this trailer with the help of the fabulous Pete Jones in Scotland. He's my video guy. We've made this little trailer so that I can start submitting it to comedy websites and trying to say hello to Americans. Hello, Americans. There's currently about 7 of you listen. Hopefully this will start to change things. So they were on the trailer, and I realised that I couldn't put out the trailer if people then thought, wow, Eddie and Hannibal came to the website and then they weren't there. So apologies for the slight rejigging of the order. Previous live episodes recorded before these ones will be coming out soon in due course. Any American listeners, do email me info@comedianscomedian.com with suggestions of your favourite comedy websites, places you think I should upload my little trailer and try and siphon off their audience onto my show. That goes for everyone. Please do send me your suggestions of comics you'd like to hear on the show. Also, in particular, Australian and New Zealand comedy recommendations, please. I'm going to those festivals next year. So I'm doing Adelaide, Melbourne, Brisbane, and then New Zealand, which feels funny to be part of that list because obviously it's more than just a city. But so I'm off there. I've had some great recommendations so far. Please keep them coming in. info@comedianscomedian.com. Or if you don't want to email me, you can join the Facebook group. You can search Comedians Comedian on Facebook, and the Twitter handle is @comcompod. Now, do you remember a few weeks ago I asked you to think of one friend who's not a comedian but would like the show, and then do them, tell them on Facebook or email them and say, hey, this is your sort of thing. Do that again. Pick a different friend or the same friend if they haven't mentioned that they've done it. Some people out there, I've spoken to a couple of people at gigs recently who've questioned whether or not non-comedians would enjoy this show, but I'm totally convinced there's an army of comedy nerds out there who want this stuff but just don't know about it yet. For example, hello to Alex, who I was very excited to see, recognised my voice on a night bus in Camden, thus making me feel very special. He very politely leant forwards and said, I'm sorry to interrupt, is there any reason I should recognise your voice? And that was really nice. It took me back to the time of when I first started gigging and got to feel just a little tiny bit special that someone would go, hey, you're that guy. So that was very kind, but the exciting thing really about Alex is that he's not a comedian, he's just a comedy fan. In fact, if you are listening to this now and you're not a comedian, just let me know, because you're my special ones, right? Comedians, you're not special for once. Non-comedians, let me know that you're listening. Just tweet @comcompod with the phrase, I'm funny for no money. And you can do that even if you're not funny. Just tweet me and say, I'm funny for no money, and I'll just get a sense of how many people out there who listen to this aren't actually comedians. That's enough stuff from me. I will return you now forthwith to the fabulous Mr. Hannibal Buress.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So talking about working stuff out on stage, there was something that I made an assumption about last year's show. I may be wrong in that.
Yeah.
But there was a story you were telling about something that had just happened to you
yeah.
that has now become a bit in your show this
right.
year. This thing about meeting a girl late at night
yeah.
and she kind of quoted rape statistics to you.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
want to kind of give the bit away, but... So that I seem to remember the show I saw last year,
mm-hmm.
you kind of told this story
yeah.
and it didn't have many jokes in it, but you were kind of finding
right.
the funny in it. So was that was those things that happened actually that previous year and you
yeah,
take
it happened,
it on stage?
It, I think I told it the day after it
I
happened.
I think you might have said
or
yeah, this
two
happened.
Days
yeah.
yeah, afterwards where this crazy thing happened and I talked about it, but it was still really rough.
Sure.
And after doing it a lot, you just find the different jokes in it. And with comedy stories, sometimes you have to add stuff in that you didn't really say.
Don't give it away, man.
I make myself sound way wittier and quicker.
Yeah.
In my stories.
I think everyone does.
She said this, and I said, witty comeback. And then I had a wittier comeback. And then I was out right at the biggest laugh. I left the story.
So with regard to that bit,
yeah.
You were... I've completely forgotten that made me laugh. I've completely forgotten the question I was going to ask. With regard to that bit of the thing that happened, yeah, that was it. You can take that on stage the next day, because the structure of your Edinburgh show,
yeah.
I don't know if it's the same this year,
yeah.
is, you know, there's a lot of shows at the Fringe have got, this is my theme, this mm-hmm. is the arc of the story.
Yeah.
And yours is what I think of as a much more American style. When
yeah, the just doing a set.
Yeah, totally. The American comedy albums I've listened to are, these are all my funniest bits
yeah.
in some order. But you had the freedom to incorporate that. In,
right.
So have you been doing that this year as well?
I have been. It hasn't been as much crazy stuff happen, but I do that with the order of my set, where I'm not stuck in the order. I close on the same thing.
Sure.
I kind of open in the same way, where it's kind of not going straight into material, but more talking about local stuff. And then the order... I change the order around. But yeah, I put in new stuff and different thoughts and try to figure out what... Because you have to do it. At least for me, I have to do it just to stay interested that yeah. long, because it's such a long festival and doing shows yeah. in the same room. So I have to do different things to keep myself... So I'm not phoning it in and shit.
Sure.
Because sometimes I think the audience is like, yo, he looks dead in the eyes. Because you can just go dead in the eyes and go on straight autopilot with you. Because you know the stuff
yeah.
and you're not engaged in it. So I try to do different things to
okay.
stay away from that.
So like, what sort of like you're rearranging the structure or kind of
rearranging the structure, adding extra lines to certain bits, just on stage, just changing a word. If there's something that has a number in it, changing a number,
sure,
you know what
okay.
I mean? Saying, oh, 17 beers instead of 13 beers. What's
sure.
funny is 17 or 30, just doing different little stuff and,
okay.
and tinkering around with the set. Like this show, since my room is small, Pleasant's upstairs, 9:45.
My room You're is selling well. You don't need this.
Since my room is small, though, the past couple shows, I decided to just not use the mic.
Yeah,
and
okay.
just try to do it like that, because I went to somebody's show. I went to somebody's show, Free Friends show. This guy Chris Dangerfield
yeah.
Has a show called Sex Tourists at the Hive. You should check it out. It was a good show. And but he wasn't using the mic, and his room was way deeper than mine, and he was very funny and he was engaged, and it was funny as hell. And so I was like, my room isn't that big, let me try it. And it for that room, in a smaller room, it was cool to not use the mic, because it made me more engaged in the bits.
Okay.
Like, you can't phone it, like with a microphone, I feel like you can phone it in and go blah, 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 and but with when you have no mic, you have to be engaged and you can add more physicality to certain bits, and it's and I think people lean in a little bit more, and it's a different type of show. Even if it's, you're doing the same bits, with,
sure.
But it feels different. So that's made it more fun for me over the past couple of nights.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are there any when you're constructing the original structure, if you like, on day one?
Yeah.
What kind of are you following any kind of rules or patterns other than close with the best bit, open with the second best bit?
No.
Or do you subscribe to that even?
It's just I'm just doing the bits. The first show I did, I just did it. And went through it, and I listened to it, and I noticed certain things. Oh, I was kind of jittery, and I was speaking kind of fast, and I was nervous, and that bit doesn't work over here, and so then I adjusted, and then my second show was really good. So it was just making small adjustments,
just instinctive sort of changes.
Listening to it, not even taking notes while listening to it, but just listening to it in my headphones, I could hear certain things that just needed to change, or things that I could add to places, or why a bit didn't work if I said the word wrong, or if I sped through it, or it's just little changes I can listen to and make.
I mean, you said that you were talking a bit fast, which I find very difficult to believe.
Well, I was talking fast for myself, or it was just in a sense of tone. It's just I could hear it where I was kind of. It was my first show back, and so I was just like, I hadn't been in that room in a while,
course,
and so it's just kind of. It was a bit of nerves.
Sure. So talking of your delivery, that's much as often in reviews, and I'm sure from the point of view of audiences, you speak with a very, it's a unique delivery. It's something that I haven't heard or that I don't recognise from any other comic. It's very uniquely you. And is that, I mean, I hadn't really spoken to you socially before now, but it does seem to be your normal rhythm of speech. Do you change anything, you know, in the way you deliver your material? Is there a mode you go into performatively?
I mean, it's just, a lot of people say that when you're doing stand-up, it's kind of just a exaggerated version of yourself. I think it is. It's just how I talk and just how I've learned that jokes go over for me and stories work on stage, so I just try to do that and make it sound natural for me. And just after performing for a while, it just, you know, you get better at working things out.
Did you ever try when you were a younger comic, did you try to give yourself certain attitudes, or did you just try and say exactly what you felt? Do you mean, did you kind of go, oh, I'm going to be the guy that says this? Did you have like a version of yourself in your mind?
Yeah, it was early on my first year. I remember I was trying to, I didn't have great jokes. I didn't have really good jokes, but I was trying to make, not necessarily, I would do a so-so joke and people would be chuckling. And then I'd say, yeah. Like it was my catchphrase. I remember I had a couple sets where I was really leaning on that. Yeah. It's like, no, tell better jokes.
Well, now your jokes are good. You can bring that in. You can bring that back. That's nice.
I guess it'd be nice to have some sort of catchphrase. Catchphrases are fun. People yell out catchphrase, that'd be cool.
So you mentioned nerves there before. Do you suffer from nerves? What's your kind of pre-show routine?
I really don't have a. I don't have one. I mean, the way my room is set up here, I just stand in the corner while the audience files in and the pre-show music plays, and then I walk out and I'm messing with my phone before the show. It just depends on the show.
Okay.
Sometimes for TV stuff I'll be nervous, but I don't really get nervous, because I kind of now have learned to put it in perspective. Like, even if it goes bad, so what? It was just a show.
Okay, so you seem to have that. I mean, that's great to hear, because there's some comedians who've been going a lot longer than you that don't have that ability to put it in a box and go, you know, well, it's okay, it's just a show.
It's just a show. I mean, in the moment or right afterwards, if after a bad show, I will be like, oh, that kind of sucked. But I won't linger on it for more than an hour or something. There's no reason to.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you sound, you sound a word that's not often used in relation to comics. You sound quite well-adjusted, do you know what I mean, about your comedy. Are you, what do you think is your kind of primary motivating factor? What drives you to be a comedian? Do you want to be, you know, do you want to express yourself, or do you want to get girls, or do you want to, you know, what's, which ones is it that makes you?
I guess both of those things.
Yeah.
Like I enjoy doing it, man, and the other stuff comes from it. So
okay.
I like, you know, I enjoyed that. That's what when I started doing it, and I just had fun. I remember when I did my first set, and it wasn't good at all, but I got some chuckles, and I just remember sitting down, and my leg was just like shaking, dude. It was just a crazy feeling. So I just really enjoy it, man. I enjoy the performance. It's nice to be walking down the street, and you think of something funny, and then later that night, try it on stage, and it works out. Just that immediacy of being able to share your ideas is really cool, and you can get a lot of girls.
Well, this is interesting. A lot of your material, I've noticed, particularly in this year's show, is kind of encounters with girls.
Yeah.
That's not a decision so much as that's what you spend a lot of time doing?
It just happens a lot. It's just, I travel and those stories happen. I thought about that too. Like, damn, am I talking about this shit too much? Do I need to mix it up? But I don't care about politics. I'm not in a relationship, so that's a thing that I talk about in a few bits. I like music. I talk about music a little bit. So that's one of the main things that... It happens. So, and a lot of weird things happen sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's talk about. I mean, I know you said earlier on about that. You know, you can give yourself a wittier comeback in your story.
Yeah.
Because a lot of your stuff is sort of based in real life, is autobiographical stuff. I'm thinking the thing with the pickle juice.
Yeah.
Your bit of material about, you know, you like to flick pickle juice on your sandwiches, and then your roommate took all your pickle juice, and now you're gonna have to kill his lizard.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a beautiful bit. It's beautiful. So how much of that, or like just choosing that as a piece, how much of it is rooted in reality?
The pickle juice itself happening is the pickle juice being there, that's real. The pickle juice disappearing is real. Me being upset about it was real. The rant against my roommate is totally fake.
Okay.
But I did hate his lizards. He had 7 lizards.
Okay, it's nice to know the lizards were real.
He had 7 lizards. That was awful. And they had lights on him. I didn't like that. It was lights all the time. So, yeah, it was. So it's some stuff that, it's rooted in reality, and then it can get really weird. But some bits are totally true, but just, you know, the main parts of the bits are true, and it's just me adding in lines of dialogue. But the story itself is 100% true with a lot of stuff.
Is that a rule that you stick to? Do you feel more comfortable saying true stuff, or is it easier to get the details right on a thing that happened? I mean, have you tried experimenting with putting the thing I asked, because the thing I've found, if there's a genuine thing that happened to me, I feel I can describe it in so much more richness and detail than if I'm kind of going, okay, I saw this guy fall down a hole, maybe it'd be funny if I said I did that, but I don't know what that experience was like enough to really describe it with that kind of.
And sometimes people, even with a 100% true story, people won't believe it anyway. Yeah. Like something that's vivid and details and all these parts. I talk in this year's show about getting into a car accident and how my head was split open, and I talk about the nurse and the doctor and the actual accident, and afterwards having my scar. It's a scar right here, and people are like, was that story real? Like, who makes up a story about being in a car accident?
It's not like it made you the hero.
That couldn't be. Yeah, it was real. People get in a car accident. Why would I lie about that?
That's funny. One of the things I noticed a lot with UK comics is, I don't know if this is a genuine truth, but it's something I always think, is whenever I hear someone go, and then he genuinely said to me, as soon as anyone says the word genuinely, I go, no, he didn't. you've made that up. But I think with the angle that you come from is because you're even the more outlandish stuff. So take the example of the lizard.
Yeah.
Because you're saying, now I have to kill his lizard. It's the first mention of a lizard.
Yeah.
But it just rings true, doesn't it? Because it's like, oh, he's that roommate. He's the guy who's got a lizard. it tells the whole story in a very small number of words. And I think that's one of your real strengths, is that you're able to describe, you're able to evoke very specific images in a very, very small number of words. And is that something that you, well, I mean, would you agree with that? And if you do, is that something that do you do that thing of writing stuff and taking words out to try and get to the punchline?
Well, yeah, it is a thing that I try to do, just because you want to sometimes get to shit quick, and just really, it's just good to get the, if you can say something in 5 words instead of 10 words, and they it has the same impact, I'd rather say it in 5 words. And if you could say it in 5 words, it's probably gonna hit harder anyway. It'd probably be, because it's just quick. So it's just, just try to condense things and just say them really briefly. And when I was working at 30 Rock, when we were writing, that was a big thing too, was just word economy and jokes, where I would say, we were pitching jokes in the room, and I would say something, and then they would like the idea, but they'd figure out a way to condense it and make it work in the script and just be more just punchy.
So how many, let's talk a little bit about, a bit about 30 Rock. I don't know if it was on Terrestrial over here, but I guess most people, comedy fans, will have heard of the fabulous sitcom 30 Rock. So you were in the writer's room for that. Can you tell us a bit about that, that structure and how that informed your...
Well, it's just, at the writer's room in 30 Rock, it's just, it's two things. It's story, and then there's script and jokes. So usually I have one group, it's 12 writers, they have one group work on story, which is just sitting in a room thinking about future storylines for other episodes. Which for a new writer, it was my, I came in on a fifth season, which would be kind of tough because I would be pitching stuff that happened already.
Oh shit. So then, not a fan like, of the show.
But I knew, I was a fan, I hadn't seen every single episode, but I definitely was a fan of the show. But
yeah,
I
of
say,
course,
what if Tracy did that? And he was like, Tracy did that, season 2, episode 3.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, damn it, man, Tracy did so much stuff already. So much stuff. So that would be, story would be tough. That's a, that's tough. But then it, we, so you, we would break a story, and you, you, you get the three main stories for that, that that episode and the different beats of that story, and then that'll get assigned to someone, and they would outline that episode and write a script. They bring that rough draft of the script in, and then we all get a copy of the script, read it, and they put it on a projector, and then for the rewrite, we go through line by line and beat the jokes. Like,
okay.
If like, the head writer said, we need to change that, and so then everybody pitched, what if we said Sasquatch instead, just different, and then...
Okay, so that's a live process. You're all looking at it, and there's a bunch of writers in the room, and they go, okay, this one, suggestions to fix this one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we, everybody would pitch until something got a, the biggest laugh in the room, and it was undeniable, and then that's what we would keep in the script.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. And has it ever, I mean, does anyone write stand-up like that, that you know? Has anyone ever kind of worked with teams of people in that way? Have you ever worked in that kind of context? Because that seems to be, I mean, that's what, I think the... What happens in UK sitcom is you get a guy or two guys or women or whatever, and they just go away and write the whole thing, and you get a British sitcom.
Yeah.
And I know what we know of kind of 30 Rock and the Simpsons is a famous example over here, that there's a team of people team, working on it together. Is it, does anyone do that with stand-up, to your knowledge? It seems like
maybe not with a large team, but I'm like, even I've had it where before my special, I had somebody come and watch me, another comedian, and then for a few jokes they would say, oh, try this line, say this instead of this, just different things like that, but not necessarily working on stand up just in a room with people. But I'm sure there's some people that don't have the time to hit the clubs and really work it out, that they do have, there's stand ups to have writers that probably write their whole thing, and just everybody works different, but
so what was, were there differences between the way 30 Rock and the way SNL
SNL was more 30 Rock was more collaborative. SNL was more, you just go, you pitch your sketches, and then maybe you write with another writer or another cast member, and you all write, and then you might write, I'll write a sketch with you, maybe, and then I'll try to find a cast member, and I'll write with them, and then write with someone else. So I'll try to submit at least 2 or 3 sketches.
Okay.
And it was more separate groups in SNL, where you're trying to get your own piece on, where 30 Rock was more of everybody working on the same thing.
Okay. So there's more, how did that make you feel, the two different ways of doing it? Is there more a shared sense of ownership with 30 Rock?
Yeah, 30 Rock was, it was easier to get jokes in because it's a half hour script, and it's so many jokes. I think it's a joke every third line of dialogue.
Yeah.
So it's just so many jokes and so many different types of jokes.
Well, that was it. It just floods you, doesn't it, with all sorts of
silly
sight
jokes,
gags, stupid,
sight gags, it's all types, and just so all types of different bits to get in. So it's just a lot of places to put your comedy. But SNL can be frustrating because it's sketch comedy is a different type of format. A lot has been done, and you know, it might not, it'll be, you'll be writing stuff that might not fit for the show.
Sure.
Whereas at 30 Rock, if you don't get a joke in, then okay, you're moving on. Three lines later, you can try to, okay, I'll pitch on this one. So okay. It's a lot of different.
And did you enjoy that more as a result?
It is fun. I think just pitching on jokes made me write better. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I enjoyed that more.
Let's talk about your inspirations as a stand-up comedian. Yeah. And a question I enjoy asking people is, did you become the sort of comedian you thought you would be when you started out?
I don't know. I don't know how I thought I'd be. I just wanted to be good. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a specific thought of like what style or what I'd be doing or what I'd be talking about. I just wanted to work hard at it and be good.
There was no one you were particularly trying to emulate or that inspired
well,
you
like
when you were younger?
Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle. I really liked Patrice O'Neill was great. Louis C.K., those guys, Bill Burr.
Sure.
Yeah, a lot of those dudes were the guys that just, you know, that really crushed it. I just wanted to do well on stage.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So the primary thing was when you say crushed it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that... It's funny, in my kind of evolution as a comic, I've been going 7 years, but like I always had those moments when you come off after the best gig you've ever had.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, that's the best gig I've ever had. That's incredible. Right. And then like a year or 2 years later, you'll do something which eclipses that so totally. You go, yeah. I can't believe I used to think I was good at this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That process kind of...
Yeah, it's different. Yeah. As you get better, as you grow... Like early on, the things that I thought was a good set, I would if I watched some of those tapes, I'd be like, man, that was garbage.
Yeah.
Just garbage. But yeah, it's just about, just like anything, you just work and get better at it and
sure.
Talk about different stuff.
Before we go into the audience for some questions, let's talk about your notebook. You've brought this with us, with you today.
Yeah.
Something it'd be interesting to know is if there's something in your... Is this like a current notebook, the one you're using at the moment?
It is. It's a mixture of current and... I think it's some stuff from, this year. Yeah. It's stuff from it's a lot of stuff.
There's it looks very different to some people's notebooks already because I've seen there's kind of like two lines on an idea. Oh, yeah. There's some more stuff there. What's this one? This one.
This makes no sense. It says Arnold-Gadhagel. That lady got a house. I don't know what that means at all. And then it's two blank lines, and it says haggling for. And it's two more blank lines, and it says duck. And then it's two more blank lines, and it says lid. I don't know what that means at all.
This really is the crucible of genius. For the benefit of the listener, Hannibal is riveted by
Well, this one... this is a bit, I talk about trying to, I want to try penguin meat.
Oh yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And I keep trying that bit, but people have too much, people love penguins too much in society. But that's one, I really do want to try penguin meat, so I keep trying this bit in different ways and trying to figure it out. And I've gotten it, it was one time where it's been different ways where I've tried it, where I've done it, where I just said, I want to eat penguin meat. This is how much I pay for a penguin meat sandwich. And and I think it'd be great. And then I'll move along. But there's been times where I've just gone on about it for 4 minutes.
Okay.
And that's not the best way to do it.
So that's a bit, I mean, I've seen you do that in this year's show. Is that,
yeah.
Do you feel that bit is still evolving, the penguin
meat? I'm still figuring out the right way to
sure.
do it. I've done
There's
it,
definitely something funny about that, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I've done it a couple times, and I figured out a decent way to get that idea across without sounding too horrible.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It's one that I really want to work.
Sure.
More than any other bits. I'm like, this is great. Why are y'all so fucked being pussies about penguins? Who cares about you care about penguins so much?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a level, in terms of the relationship you have with your audience, you're kind of, you don't try to be liked. like a lot of comedians might come on and really make an effort to to be likable, and you seem very secure in yourself, and part of that is that's very attractive to an audience, I think, because you appear to be, I think, giving this sort of sense of, it's, you know, this is the jokes, this is the stuff.
Well,
you know,
you're not going,
get on board, you know what I mean?
Oh,
you know,
just trying to hype people up.
Well, no, I don't mean hype.
I mean, but just...
Yeah, so much as... you're definitely not trying to hype people up. Mm. But equally, like, your likability comes from, I think, your security, rather than, you know, you're not smiling at people winning us over.
Yeah.
But you have... you have a sense of, this is awful, it sounds like I'm saying, you're not likable, Hannibal. That's not what I mean. Yeah. But what I mean is that you have that kind of, that sense of quiet and stillness about you that means people are engaging with you without you. I mean, do you feel that you have to win an audience over?
Well, I do, yeah. You have to be funny to win an audience over. I mean, that's how you lose an audience. You're like, this dude,
sure,
sucks.
Yeah.
So you want to just, I'm just trying to do good bits, and I think the comfort on stage just comes from performing a lot and learning how to work on stage. More so, it's not a conscious thing to say, oh, I'm gonna be standoffish.
Sure.
It's just more just that's how I work on stage, and I'm happy if people engage by it and enjoy it. But yeah, it's just more. And like everybody approaches it different, you know?
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, and it is. I think that's, you know, one of those, like one of the reasons I'm sure why you had such an impact when you arrived here last year is because you have that kind of, that sense of it. There's not only the stagecraft, but that sort of quiet that draws us in.
Oh,
do you know what I mean? That pace that draws us in.
Yeah. So, thank you, man.
Hey, well, you're welcome. Back to the penguin stuff. This is bombing. Save me with the penguin material. So the way your notebook works, you're making notes in there and coming back to them and sitting and writing,
I come back
and expanding
to them.
On them.
Yeah, and yeah, it's just different.
Do you have
small thoughts?
Do you have an example of like a bit, an idea you've had recently that hasn't yet become a bit that we could maybe chart? We could sort of try and describe what you'll do to that idea to try and unpack it, to try and find the funny in it.
All right, let me see. Then we duck lid. We went through that and. Let's go to so lots of weird stuff. It's funny the stuff you write down where it makes sense in the moment, and then you look at it, you're like, that doesn't mean anything at all. this isn't good podcast at all.
Yeah.
We would have to chop that out. It's just like,
I'm leaving it all in.
What is this? It's just pages turning and a man giggling. I don't want to hear this.
No, this is on the contrary.
I want to talk about how I haven't figured out a way to do it, but I Google just about every person I encounter in my life, if they tell me their first and last name.
you Google everyone you meet.
I Google most people. All the girls.
Okay.
I Google all of them just to see what the fuck they've been up to.
That's totally an album track right there. New album, track 7, I Google all the girls.
I Google them, like, what's going on, man?
Okay, so
but
that's...
I got to figure out how to make that funny.
That's
funny. Yeah, just figure out why. But yeah, I don't know if that's weird to... Did I Google ever? No, it's there. If you don't want to be Googled, then don't be a person.
But you're approaching that from a... What is the angle that you're approaching that from? Just how you feel about it. Just how a genuine reaction.
It's just like what I do for people. If I met some people and I get home, like, what do I mean? Then what did they say their last name was? All right, let me Google that person. Just why not?
talking of Googling and names and so forth, do you Google yourself?
Google myself.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you read your own reviews?
I have, but I shouldn't, man. I saw one today, actually, for the guy. He said, "Oh, his shit, it was patchy." I was like, "Nah, I remember the show he was at, and I rocked that shit."
Yeah, yeah, that's.
And I almost emailed him, but I was just like, "Nah, don't do it."
No, good, good work.
It was the one, yeah, and there was this one audience reviewer that tweeted me his review. He tweeted me his own review. He's not even a real review. He went to my first show,
okay,
which you're not supposed to review previews.
Sure.
And he reviewed it like, oh, and it was just, why are you sending me your fucking...
Like at you to...
At me on Twitter. Okay. Send me his 3-star review, this husband, this husband and wife blogger team.
Oh, is that? Oh, yeah, I remember the reference. Yeah, the husband and wife blogger.
They sent me this review. And then, yeah, so I shouldn't... I also remember that it's... But I don't get too angry. It's the same thing where I was like, oh, that sucks. But then I remember it's just a person,
yeah,
and their thoughts. So another audience member might have had the same thought about the show. They just don't work at a paper, and it's all perspective and
totally
subjective. And you know, you don't need everybody to like it. You just need some people to enjoy it. So so I remember like, oh yeah, don't give a fuck about it. If people like, I know who's enjoying it because I'm at the shows and I'm doing the shows, so I know what it is.
It's still tempting.
It's tempting. It's tough. Because you're like, oh man, because I mean, there's a lot of good ones, so it does feel good. So you like see it. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. That's going to bring people in. But you got to take both of them, man. You got to take all the shit.
That's it. Well, that's the famous thing they say at the Edinburgh Festival. If you accept the fives, you've got to accept the ones.
You got to take the other shit.
Do you know what I mean?
You just got to know that you still got to do the shows. So just try to do good shows.
And is there what bit of material that you've got or that you've ever written, what's the thing you're most proud of, would you say?
The most,
what's the thing that you really went, I nailed that was it? Like, not, I don't mean a gig, but like a concept, a joke or a bit.
I mean, some of my favorite bits are just stupid bits that, I mean, there's some that I feel like were worked on and well written and really fine tuned, but there's some, like my new kind of favorite bit that I do is done. It's just, yeah, I went to Norway for a few days. Norway, more like boring way. And I think, I'm like, that's a great bit. That's for me. I'm like, that's funny, right? I didn't say boring way. I said boring way instead of boring way. I enjoy that bit.
That's
so
deliberately
much.
Missing the bit. That's beautiful.
So that's one that it's some that I enjoy telling. Even if they might not crush in the crowd, they'll get a decent, like, fun, but I don't anchor anything on them.
Sure.
I kind of just do a quick thing and keep it moving. But I like having silly bits that in different, like, you want to, I like to have fun with different structures too.
Yeah, you're changing it up constantly, aren't you? In the terms of your style, there's like a longer story about something true and then something a bit daft and
a story and then a quick bit and story and a series. Yeah, just like try to mix it up.
We've got a small amount of time left. If there are any questions, feel free, if you ask them through me for the sake of the recording, I'll... I mean, you can look at him. You don't need to. We're talking here about new material and where you place it in your set and different events, you know, different gigs that you might try that.
Yeah.
I know you heard all
he
that.
He said, he said, do you try like a 20 minute block? That would be crazy. A 20 minute block of new material. That would be rough. No, I try to place them in the set. Like, I've tried new material here in my regular show, so I'll try to figure out a place if they fit in with a certain chunk of other material. Like, I talk about death, so the penguin thing. So I was trying to find a good place for the penguin bit because I was like, it got to work somewhere. So I was like, okay, I'll talk about the penguin meat. Maybe I'll put that after talking about death. Like, I want to have penguin meat before I die. Sometimes I'll put the penguin meat thing where I'm just talking about going to restaurants. I'm like, oh, I was going to restaurants. I ordered this, and I went to another restaurant, and this happened. And also, I want to go to a restaurant and get penguin meat. I try to just figure out different places where bits work if they have the same sort of similar subject matter. So it's just not a non sequitur bit by itself.
Sure.
And also, it's couched in. So if it doesn't work, it has a bit that works on each side of it. So the audience doesn't know that the show is sinking.
Slip it between two good bits. It's always good advice. Always good advice for new stuff. Which American acts would you recommend this year or come to see?
Kumail Nanjiani is at the Assembly Roxy at 8. He's very funny. We started out together in Chicago, actually. Eddie Pepitone is here. He's playing.
And he's also on the show tomorrow. Eddie Pepitone is coming by tomorrow. Just plug that.
Yeah, Eddie. Eddie Pepitone's very funny guy.
He's incredible.
He's on at the Just the Tonic, 11-ish. Rick Shapiro is very funny. Rick Shapiro is hilarious. He's at Assembly. I'm not sure if it's Assembly Rooms or the Assembly. That's very confusing.
Yeah, it is. It's a big issue this year, yeah.
But those guys. Kurt Bronola and Kristen Shaw, very great. But it's a lot of, I could go on and on about people in America that should come over. It's a tough sell to be like, hey, come over here for a month.
Yeah, sure.
Person with a family.
So finally then, where next? What do you see? What's your plan? Obviously you're going to keep gigging, keep doing stuff. You said you might not come back to Edinburgh next year, but it's in your consciousness now. It's somewhere where you have a...
It's just now just working and just trying to get better and make the set the best I can. So just trying to work harder because I just want to work harder on stand-up.
Focusing on stand-up as opposed to writing for other shows?
Yeah, I'm not going to write for other shows. I write for this show, the Eric Andre Show. It's a show on Adult Swim. Okay. I don't know if it comes on here, so you can torrent it. I won't be mad.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's available to illegally download.
Illegally download it, share it. I would like if it became popular over here, so yeah, I don't care. So it's a weird show. It's a talk show. I'm the co-host on it. And I'm also writing my own project for Fox.
Okay.
I'm just... doing stand-up. And
is that a stand-up project or a...
It's a sitcom.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't have a plot yet.
Okay.
Well, it has a plot, but I wouldn't want to ruin it yet. But yeah, hopefully just working on those projects, doing some voiceover work too, and for some cartoons and just
what
working.
What cartoons you do?
It's this one, China, Illinois, which is also on Adult Swim.
Okay.
Illegally downloaded, I guess.
Look out for that.
That'll be on the next season of that. And so just constantly trying to work, man, and have fun.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for Mr. Hannibal Buress.
Thanks, y'all.
So thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Hannibal. I thought that was a great interview. I'm very, very pleased with how that went. And I hope you get the chance to see Hannibal soon. I don't know when he's next coming over to the UK, but if he does, you've got to go and see him. Seek out his stuff on YouTube. There's a documentary about him up there already on Vimeo, I think. And there's another, weirdly, he was actually shooting a documentary while he was in the room for that episode. So hopefully that will be around at some point as well. And you can maybe see Hannibal's Edinburgh Fringe experience in a more... a whole kind of a way. Thanks to BBC Worldwide, as ever. Thanks to Graham Crockford, Tom Wateracre, Pete Jones, Toby Rose, Le Petit Horace. Coming up next week, it is Eddie Pepitone. And I'm also doing some very exciting live interviews over the next couple of weeks. So look out for them. I'll speak to you next week. Cheerio.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.